Welcome, everybody, to yet another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast, a Nerd Balls production. I am your host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. And holy shit, guys, do we have a guest for you today? Sean McKeever's on the show. The guy's done so much in the realm of comics, it's unrealistic. It really is. It puts a comic book writer to me to, like, holy shit, you gotta do better sort of thing. But Sean is a wonderful guy. We have some very, very fun talks and also deep motivational talks this episode. Well, obviously we talk about his work, but prepare yourself, folks, because it is an episode where we get pretty deep motivational to fellow creators. And we talk about diversity in the comics. And we also talk about motivation and inspiration and stuff like that. A lot of that stuff on this episode and what we do as creatives. So be forewarned about that. Definitely, folks, too, we want to put it out there is make sure whatever you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, comicchronicle.podbean.com, what you guys are listening on, subscribe and leave a review for the show. We definitely appreciate it, guys. It really means a lot. And spread the word of the show. Tell your friends. Share posts on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. If you guys do use Instagram or whatnot as well, you can do hashtag the Comic Chronicle Podcast. And do that, and you know, maybe if you put a review in it or something like that, we'll give a shout out on the show. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. And just fair warning, it's a fun episode with a really fun guy. Alrighty, folks. Now, take it away, video game writer, comic book writer, Sean McKeever. Cool, and we're recording for the show. Welcome to the show, Sean. How you doing, man?
Thanks. I'm good.
Good. Now, before, and I don't know if you want to dive too much into it, but how you feeling? Because, like, you told me before you're hurting a little bit. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I'm feeling better. You know, it's just, you know, getting old.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's one thing after another with my health this last year and a half, and this is just a small thing, all things considered. So, yeah, I'm on the mend.
Okay, good, good. Well, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
47.
That's not bad.
No, it's not.
No. But it's one of those that sometimes it can be a domino effect. It can just hit you right upside the head. It's weird. I mean, because I have a bad shoulder. I'm young. I'm only 22. I have a bad shoulder, gray hairs, and receding hairline. So I don't know what that's supposed to mean in the next 20, 30 years for my health. But hey, whatever.
Yeah. You know, I've had fairly good luck overall with my health for my life. Outside of not dieting well, you know, but you know, it's just lately I just hit a bad run of stuff. It seems like it all waited to hit at once. But things are looking up.
Good. When you told me what was going on, like, oh, just Winston in pain. I'm like, oh God, no. It's like yeah. Ooh.
Well, yeah, it's fun to try to sleep in pain.
Oh God. It's yeah. Yeah. There's so many listeners right now that are probably like, yeah. 100%. Now, in positive news, now you've worked on so many books in the comic book industry. I mean, it's first off, I got to say is love your work. It's always astounding to me. And I want to put this notion out there that if you read at least Marvel Comics, you've read at least one of your books.
It's possible. I mean,
it's got to be.
You know, I've been all over the place there with a lot of different Spider-Man stuff and Inhumans and the Hulk and Mystique and a lot of little one shots and things all over the place and miniseries. So yeah, I've been I've been pretty lucky getting to play with a lot of the toys that I played with as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, just naming all this name drop and stuff all over the place, left and right. There, so I mean, just a little bit, but. That's amazing to me, man. And so do you consider yourself like freelancer or just like one, just you're a Marvel guy, but you do some stuff on the side, or you just straight freelancer?
Yeah, I'm pretty much a straightforward freelancer. Hmm. You know, I got into the business of comics initially because I wanted to write for Marvel. And so I got to do that, and I got to do quite a lot of it, and I worked almost exclusively for them, although I was never exclusive for a number of years. Then I went exclusive at DC for a couple of years, signed an exclusive with them, and, I never really found time during all that period to really do a lot of my own stuff in comics. Went into video game writing full-time.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I went to work for BioWare on their Star Wars The Old Republic MMO.
Ooh.
And... Oh. Did that for like 3.5 years. And then I went back to freelance because freelancing is what I like. And so right now I'm doing freelance video games. I'm doing freelance comic books. But the comic book stuff has been, you know, kind of more on the creator-owned or at least creator-generated side of things.
Yeah, with Outpost Zero and whatnot, too, going on currently, if I remember right, too.
Yeah, Outpost Zero is my current series with Skybound. They own that, but I created it for them. And I've got some other pitches out there right now. But really, the video game work right now is keeping me super busy. I'm just wrapping up season two of an X-Files mobile narrative game.
Oh, shit.
That comes out later this year from a subsidiary of Fox Disney. Oh. And so that's pretty exciting for me, but it's been a heck of a lot of work. I've written probably something like 180,000 words of text for the game. You know, I mean, in the game, that doesn't include the, you know, the dozens and dozens of outline documents that I've put together. But it's been a heck of a long journey, and I'm excited for people to check it out.
I can't wait for that. I love X-Files for one, and two, that I've heard so much about it. Like, people, friends of mine who have worked in video games a little bit, they've talked about writing for games, and 100%, man, power to you, because holy crap, like, that's the stuff I hear of it. It is that long process, and there's just so many. I mean, with that alone, of how many words you've written just for dialogue, that's insanity to me as a comic book writer myself. I'm like, oh my god, like, how do you tackle like a video game script or just a video game in general, like tackle writing one of those things? Because to me, it's insanity.
Yeah, it can vary quite a bit depending on what you're doing. Most of the work that I've done has been in RPG type games where they have branching narratives, which is, you know, like what Star Wars The Old Republic was, and it's what this X-Files game is. Mm-hmm. And that can be a real mindfuck, you know. It requires you to not just be creative, but to be very organized at the same time. So you're really working both sides of your brain. And it's a lot, you know. I mean, you're setting variables for little things and big things that you have to remember going forward. And mm-hmm. There's just a lot that you have to do to try to make sure that it all feels like it's a natural progression of a story, no matter what the player picks.
And you got to make it feel immersive. You got to make it feel in that world. Because what I was told was you have to write so many different versions of stuff like that for what the player chooses. And so, like, you always are like, okay, you could spend so long on one scene of something because you have to write all the different alternatives for that, like, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I just wrote an episode that had the culmination of a subplot that had been going on for many, many episodes, and you know, the variables involved in just writing one, what to the player will be one 5-minute experience, took me, you know, more than a day just to work that out, you know, because there are several permutations of that. I couldn't even tell you how many ultimate permutations there are of that scene. But it's probably a couple dozen at least. I mean, that stuff, it doesn't take long to spiral, you know, when you have three choices and then you let those three choices spawn three choices, you know, you're already at nine.
Yeah, you know? Shit. You're like, what can the player choose? And then you'll still hear from it like, oh, I wanted to do this and I couldn't do that. Damn it!
Yeah, I'm a victim of my own ambitions ultimately. You know, I make the game as complicated as I want to, and ooh, as I'm writing it, I think, well, this would be an interesting thing to, or even beforehand when I'm developing a plot, I'd say, well, this is something I'd really like to touch on later and have reflected in the story going forward. And you know, every time you make that decision, you're shooting yourself in the foot, kind of, when it comes down to you know, months later and you're actually writing that scene.
Yeah, shit, like, I mean, but it's one of those, you still love what you do, you know. I mean, if you're still making games, like, which do you prefer more, like, comics or game writing, do you think? I mean, one obviously is longer than the other.
Yeah, I mean, I comics for sure. I grew up on comics. comic books. You know, I started reading Spider-Man comics when I was 3.
Wow,
it's been
really?
A lifelong love of mine, and what I found, especially writing this X-Files game, which is the most intense thing I've ever written in my life, because it's, you know, it's a mix of prose and dialogue. Mm-hmm. So it's really like I've written a couple novels so far.
Jeez.
And with all the decision points and everything like that, it's, you know, I do enjoy the challenge of it, and it's rewarding creatively in terms of what I think I'm doing with the characters and such. But when I go back to work on a comic book now, like, I'll write a script in a day or two, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's so easy now to write that, and I'm like, oh, if only I could just write more of the comics and less of the video games, because it can be kind of draining. And like I said, I've been going through that health stuff, and so that was all happening while I was just, you know, neck deep in the X-Files game, and that made it all the much harder to recover and to write the game. And so it was a pretty rough time. Right now I'm on a little bit of a break from writing scripts on that game until we get going on the next bit of work there. But I'm kind of relaxing by you know, writing a bunch of comic book pitches and stuff, because it's so much easier.
Oh my god, yeah, you're just like, oh, this is child's play. I mean, we don't want to say it too loud because they're not going to give you another job, but they're like, it is right. Child's play here. Like, it's so easy.
Yeah, like, comparatively, it certainly is.
Oh my god, about a week I could see you getting a whole, so you got a week. I could see you writing out a whole series of like 30 something issues.
Though.
No, that's true. That's not relaxing at all. That's lots of coffee. That's lots of just staying up late. That's lots of.
I have the ambition to do that stuff. It's a matter of I don't want to do it until I find publishers.
Yeah, that's the key. That 100% is the key, man. But so I gotta ask, like, so you mentioned reading Spider-Man at 3. Like, how did you get in the comics? Like, was it so? Obviously, you started incredibly younger than probably anybody listening.
Yeah, I think that it started with the Spider-Man 60s cartoon. Was, you know, that was in syndication. I was born in the 70s, and that was in syndication, and I saw that, and I probably saw Spider-Man on Electric Company, and so I saw a Spider-Man comic book in the pharmacy and wanted it, and so my mom bought it for me. It was an issue of Spidey Super Stories, and they would read the comics to me, my folks, and I got to the point where I wanted to read them, so I started to learn the words and everything, you know, and so, yeah, I was a lifelong comic book fan. I actually sold comic books out of my parents' hardware store in northern Wisconsin for 10 years.
Get out.
It started with a magazine rack that I bought, or that I got from the from the grocery store next door. They were just getting rid of it, and it was perfectly like new, but they were just getting new racks or whatever. So I grabbed that from being taken to the dump, and got an account with a deep discounting retailer and started selling comics. And then I, you know, that grew and grew until it was like about 250 square feet inside of a True Value artwork thing.
How old were you at the time?
I started in, I want to say, 87. So I was like 15.
You're 15 and you're doing all the.
Yeah.
Sean, you are like the most innovative, like hardworking, patient man I've met.
Really. Well, you know, we moved from Milwaukee to northern Wisconsin when I was 8, and we moved up there so my dad could open up a hardware and sporting goods store, and my mom and dad both worked there, and you know, I was the youngest of our family. I started working there, you know, before I was old enough to legally work,
which was most.
That wasn't even my first job. My first job was actually I worked for the local movie theater. Me and my friend John Cook, we'd get to see a movie for free if we cleaned up all the popcorn and junk afterwards.
Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that was, you know, I mean, it got a little crazy when we'd go like three times in a week, and you know, they only had two screens, and it's like, well, do we want to watch, you know, Bustin' Loose with Richard Pryor again? Oh. And yes, they did let us go see rated R movies because our parents gave them the okay.
Wow, that's cool.
This was like probably fourth grade, fifth grade. I don't know.
There's no way you could get away with that now. There's none.
No. Never happened. But that, you know, that's small town life as well.
That's true. That's true.
But so I always had the kind of the entrepreneurial bug, and you know, I still do now. I think if I had the bandwidth, I'd be, you know, building apps and doing things of that nature. But as it is, you know, I keep myself pretty busy with the writing, and that's fine by me. Because I love the creative endeavors as well.
Yeah, 100% of that. Of, you know, we got the writing bug. It doesn't tend to go away. I got offered for the comic company I work for, SGGS Comics. I pitched the comic to them. They're a new up and coming company, and they said, they messaged me. They're like, "Hey, would you want to? We know you work in film. You have a day job. You do the podcast. You all this other jazz. You're already writing a series. But would you want to write more?" And it was the immediate yes. Like, all right, give me a week and I'll pitch together a couple series for you. And those both got approved. And so it's one of those, you got the bug, the creative bug. It's tough to go away. It doesn't go away, actually. It stays with you. And you always want to create, you know?
Oh, sure. I took a 1 month break once from writing comics in early 2006. And I spent that entire month making a comic book publishing simulator on my website, like, you know, writing it in code from scratch. Mm-hmm. And you know, I got as far as like beta testing it with some of my back then I had a forum on my site, so with some of the forum regulars and some of my friends, and it just never quite came together. But we had a lot of fun doing it, and we, you know, it was hard for anybody to make any money, which I felt like it was kind of demoralizing, but at the same time I felt, well, that's true to life.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's always something that I want to, you know, whether it's strictly creative or creative with an eye towards, like, this doesn't exist, or this is a challenge that I'd like to tackle. You know, I've always got that in my head. Although it is nice to take vacations from that.
It's true, but those vacations, they tend to last shorter than you want them to. I found out. I took a week off, and in that week, I found myself still working on stuff. It's like, no. It's like, you gotta quit. Like, what are you doing? Like, oh, I'm doing some photo editing for a promotion art. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Like, oh, I got a journal with me. Oh, put the journal away. No, I'm writing down notes for future scripts. I can't do this.
Yeah, like, I find like when I'm taking some trips, I can compartmentalize that pretty well. But if it's like a longer trip, like if I'm going to see family, and I've got deadlines, I just can't, you know, not do some work. It's also nice because I value my alone time, so that's a nice way to kind of get away and be by myself and with my thoughts and stuff. But like if I go to Vegas or something like that, like it's very easy for me to just never think about work.
Yeah, that's like the one where you're just easily distracted.
Like, yep.
Oh man, so how did you go from selling comics to the store, which is amazing, by the way? That's a story within itself you could do. Like, who is this man? It's not me, I swear. But it looks like you as a kid. No, it's the similarities. How do you go from that to working at Marvel? Like, was it like this long journey, or was it this all of a sudden just kind of happened sort of thing?
Oh, it was a very long journey. Yeah. I wrote my first ever submission to Marvel in high school. Like around the time that maybe a couple years after I started selling comics, and I didn't even know how to go about it or do it. So I took a poster board and drew out like the panel shapes and stuff, and wrote descriptions in the panels of what was happening because I couldn't draw very well.
Yeah.
I actually made like the captions and word balloons and lettered it.
That's brilliant.
And they sent it back. You know, sent back the originals and form letter, and that was my first of many form letters I'd get from Marvel as I kept trying to pitch stuff to them, you know, I'm just kind of throwing ideas at them, and that's what you did back then, you know, or at least they allowed you to do that, you know. I don't think people really got work that way, but they kind of let that door be open, which isn't anymore. But you know, I started to get frustrated with it, and thought, well, what do I want to write about if not my own, if not like a Spider-Man story, you know, or an X-Men story. And, you know, I had all these comic books around me in the shop, and, you know, there was stuff like Stray Bullets and Hate and Strangers in Paradise that I thought were doing really cool stuff. And I was also looking at television, stuff like ER and Homicide and Seinfeld that I thought were, you know, they were doing things that obviously we weren't doing in comics at the time. And just kind of mashing all that in my head and letting it marinate, I came up with a series called The Waiting Place, which is an ensemble drama about kids growing up in a dead-end town, which is kind of what I was doing at the time. I was in my 20s. I had dropped out of college. And, you know, here I was, you know, living in this town. I swore I was going to leave when I was 18, and I was still there. So I wrote about that, and you know, found through the CompuServe comics and animation forum. This is back when you had to dial up to go on to AOL or CompuServe. You know, there was internet, but not quite. You know,
yeah.
like those were kind of the entry gates into the internet. And so through that, I found a guy who knew some artists in Pittsburgh who were pretty talented and trying to make it same as me. And I talked to them, and we gained each other's trust and decided we'd do the first issue of the comic. And maybe we'd never get published, never get paid, but we'd do it anyway. And so we did that, and I shopped it around to publishers, and one of those publishers was Dan Votto at Slave Labor Graphics, and he left me a voice message on my answering machine. He said, yeah, I read this comic you guys made. I want to read the second one, so I guess I'll publish it.
Wow.
You know?
Just like nonchalant, I guess I'll publish it.
that's kind of, Dan has this kind of curmudgeonly way about him, you know? Even when he's glowing with praise, he's kind of, you know, he's kind of gruff. I love it about him.
That's amazing.
And that was 1997 that The Waiting Place started getting published. And at the same time, I was also doing some short stories for the Negative Burn anthology from Caliber Comics, which is a great way to kind of break in and get noticed, you know, doing short stories in the same book as people like Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons and Neil Gaiman and Phil Hester and, you know, all these up and coming people or people who were very well established. From that, you know, I was hoping that I'd get noticed at Marvel, but I wasn't. I still kept sending, you know, I sent my books, I sent more pitches, and I just wasn't making any progress. But, you know, meanwhile, in just making friends in comics and going to conventions and being online, a friend of mine that I had made, Paul Jenkins, you know, at the time when we became friends, I think he had just stopped working for Tundra Publishing for Kevin Eastman as an editor, and he was writing some stuff for Vertigo and Caliber. He was writing Hellblazer, and then he moved on to do some stuff at Marvel. Paul was getting a little behind on his Hulk schedule, The Incredible Hulk, and asked the editor, Tom Brevoort. He said, well, I know this writer. You know, he really wants to work at Marvel. His name's Sean McKeever, and Tom says, oh, yeah, I read The Waiting Place. It's a really good book. I didn't know he wanted to write for us.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, and so so while The Waiting Place didn't really make us any money back then, like maybe like $50 an issue or something like that. Yeah. You know, we split amongst us, me and the artists. You know, one of the people reading it was, you know, somebody at Marvel, and he enjoyed it. So that got me my break writing an issue of The Incredible Hulk, and that was in 2000 that I wrote that. And and then I got a couple other, you know, one-off kind of gigs writing fill-in stories. And I wrote another few issues of The Incredible Hulk, and that, you know, that took me to the end of 2002, which is when Marvel came to me and asked me to pitch two different ongoing series. These were pitch-offs where they were asking, you know, a lot of different writers to pitch each of the titles that they had come up with. Mm-hmm. And the two that they asked me to pitch, they hired me for. And so that was Inhumans and Sentinel. And in January of 2003, I was a full-time freelance comic book writer, finally. And had two Marvel number ones, and I was, you know, pretty much blown away by that.
Your inner child must have been screaming with so much joy and be like, I did it!
Oh, he still does.
Yeah. Oh, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's really cool to have made it. I always had I was never a very self-confident kid. Or even young adult, you know, in my 20s. But there was something about this that I knew it was going to happen. Mm. I you know, all the logic aside, like I knew all the pitfalls, I knew everything. I'm like, no, I know this is going to happen. Because I knew what I had in me in terms of ability and things that I wanted to say. And it just felt, you know, it's the closest thing to religion I ever had, you know, where just like, you know, never mind any sort of reality, you know, like this is what I truly believe with all my soul, you know?
Yeah.
And it happened.
I mean, you kept
so,
with
you
it.
Know, but I'm so relieved it did, because
yeah.
What would I be like now if it hadn't?
Oh, God. You would be desperately trying to adapt.
I'd be successful doing something else, but I'm sure I'd always be wondering what if, you know?
Hey, ladies and gents, this is Dakota coming at you with a little bit of an ad break right now, because we have good news for you. Do you guys have an ad for a product, an event, or are you an actor trying to get your way out there in the world, or actress? Who knows? Whatever it may be, you guys can have it in the show. That's right, we're now doing ads. Do you guys want to have one in the show? I know it may seem something bad, but we're here to help you guys. They'll promote you and whatnot too, and help give you guys escape into the world. But we want to help out our community and help out our fan base. So for just $10 a month, you guys can have your own little ad of your choice, and we'll have it promoted on the show. You can either record it and send it to us, or we'll record one for you with all the information. That's right, folks, for just $10 a month, you guys can have your ad in the show. How do you do it? Well, just email filmworld97@gmail.com. That's filmworld97@gmail.com for all the details and payment and figuring out what it is and whatnot that you guys want to do. Of course, I'm not going to be doing things that are racist or anything like that. That's not what the show is. So, thank you guys for tuning in, and we're going to get right back to the show. But remember, filmworld, F-I-L-M, world97@gmail.com, and we'll go figure it out from there. You guys can be on the show. Think about it. Alrighty, now, back to the episode. Oh yeah, you're just wondering, like, what would have happened if I did go with it? That kind of does that big moral and message of that story, Sean, is the people listening, hopefully you guys take note, is keep working and never give up, because obviously, Sean, you never gave up, you kept working, and two, you don't know who the hell's reading or watching your stuff, or listening in this case, too. You never know, like, people, I've worked in the movie business for a while now, and there's people who will contact me from my companies, or people I know in Hollywood, or friends of mine, and be like, hey, watch this thing, or people be like, I read your book, like, wait, you did? So, like, you never know, you really don't know, and it's insane in the world we live in. And there's a quote, I like it so much, I had Andy Poon, he does the artwork, he does the concept, well, a costume concept for, he helps design for Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, all those shows. And he was a guest on the show. He's a good friend of mine. And he said this quote perfectly of, always on social media or whatever you do, don't pay attention to how many likes or comments you get, because there's so many people out there who won't like or comment it, and you never know who that person is or how many people that really truly watch or read it, because you just because they don't like or comment. But there's so many people that do more than that, so it's like you just don't worry about that, because the people who don't do it are greater than people who do do it.
I like the important thing is to do the work, you know. I mean I was in my frustrations I was always like, how do I just get to write the Spider-Man stories I want to tell, you know? And I know a lot of people feel that way. It's like, but I got this great Spider-Man story, why can't I just tell that? Well, you know, you got to work your way to it. You got to do the work. And honestly, you know, I was not ready at 20 years old or, you know, 17 years old or 24 years old to write a Marvel comic. I wasn't. It wasn't until I wrote The Waiting Place and I got in the groove of how I want to tell comic book stories and why I want to tell comic book stories that I wound up getting work at Marvel. And that my work stood out at Marvel because all those stories that I had when I was a kid, I wasn't telling those stories. I didn't want to tell those stories because I realized those were just plots. You know, they weren't really about anything. And so that I think helped me a great deal. And it's a you know, if you've got the creative bug, create. I get it. It's frustrating that, you know, you can show it to some friends and your parents and, you know, not much else. But, you know, I mean, we've got the internet now. You can put it out there for everybody to see. You never know who's going to come across it. You know, I know people who, you know, artists who've been hired because they have, you know, a Tumblr or a Life Journal site, you know. Just put it out there. People who do web comics wind up getting hired, you know?
It's true. Oh, yeah. Like, you never know who's looking, man. And obviously, like, as a comic book writer myself and people out there who listen who are comic book writers, there's plenty of indie folks who I know that listen to the show. And, you know, I would like to work for Marvel or DC at one point, but, you know, I've been writing these three series now, and I'd like maybe in a couple years, too, because you got to start small. You know, I've been doing it with now a few months. You know, you always have to start as you did. You started small, in a sense, and then kind of trained yourself to do the great thing, because you can't just dive headfirst into something, you know? Like, people in the movie business I see, they're like, oh, I'm an actor, and it's like, yeah, cool, I'm an actor too, but I'm not diving headfirst thinking I'm going to get Netflix in my first damn gig. You're not going to happen, buddy. It's very rare.
Well, and the reality is, I mean, when you think about how many people make comic books versus, like, you know, how many athletes... hired athletes are in the NFL right now. There's probably fewer people making comic books, you know?
That's true.
It's not going to happen for everybody.
No.
Which is why I feel it's important to do something that makes you happy. And I think that that's going to do two things. It's going to, one, make you happy. And two, it's going to show in the work. And that's what's going to be your edge. And maybe that edge, you know, just doesn't make it for you. You don't get the right break or whatever, you know. Luck is definitely part of the whole equation, but at least you'll be happy doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's it. Like, you won't have any regrets when you get way older and, you know, like, way older than your age, Sean. But... this guy said, I mean, hey, because you may be like, well, I hit that old age. No, you haven't. but... in that sense of, like, when you get really older, you know, maybe you're in a retirement home or hell and whatever future thing we have anymore, who knows in, like, 50 years what's going to be happening. But you have that and you're in that life, you know, you can be looking back and be like, you know what? It was actually worth it. And then in the times when you're getting to that, you can, like, be like, oh, times were really rough. But you can sit down and you can just sit down, relax, and enjoy it and be like, hey, I'm doing what I love to do. I'm doing what I get to do for a living sometimes. And if not, you can be like, I'm working to do what I want to do for a living. And you know, but I'm actually starting to do it. So it's always one of those you can sit down and think about it and be like, okay, maybe the bad thing's not really that bad. And you can move it to push forward. So being creative is like the best therapy you can ever get, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, if you have like a regular job that isn't what you love to do, I mean, that's your fuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's your drive to do something that you really love in your off time. And if that's writing or drawing comics, or coloring comics or what have you, or, you know, indie filmmaking or video games, then by all means, you know, get into that creative endeavor and, you know, use your frustration, you know, towards your regular day job to fuel it, you know, turn it into a fire, you know, that spurs your creativity and your excitement.
Yeah, I agree full-heartedly. And I think we've both been down that path already. And so we can definitely be like, people, go for it. You got to light the flames. Like, in a cheesy Star Wars quote, light the flames that will fuel the rebellion or something like that.
Right.
It's the one quote I'll give from The Last Jedi, but still. you know, so it's really one of those things you just have to keep pushing it forward. And the listeners at home right now and the people who I know that are in the comic book business that listen and in the movie business, you know, just take this for heart. Sean obviously knows what he's doing. He's doing it right. So obviously he's an expert, but just listen. Just really take it to heart and really move forward with it. And that's what I like about this show. It's like Sean, I get to have people like you on. We get to have these conversations and actually help people out, because people who I've known, I've had guests who message me back later and they say, hey, I've got a lot of good people have come back and said, thank you for the show. And it's like, oh, cool. Like, this is what it's meant to do, is be the good thing for creatives, a little behind the scenes stuff, is, you know, having a good time. It's one of those things you just always have to keep going. But Sean, you're amazing, man. I just got to put that out there. You know, like,
yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, you may not think so sometimes, but I think so. And so, like, you've given some, I just got to say thank you for the good advice, man. Like, it's very helpful to me, to others, and, you know, to fellow creatives out there, because there's people out there who still feel that same way who are the big, huge names I know of. And so they're like, well, I'm down in the slums and whatnot. But, you know, no matter how big or small I may be as a creative, you still get those rough times.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, when you become a full-time freelancer and, you know, you were talking about, you know, saying yes to things, you know, when you have to pay the bills, sometimes you have to say yes to things that you don't really want to necessarily.
Yeah.
And you're slogging through. You know, and it's always good to remember, you know, what the other side of that equation would be. You know, if you weren't taking the work, or you weren't offered work, you know, what would you be doing instead? And I think it's worthwhile to try to keep that in mind. I know it's hard to when you're in the middle of it. I mean, I even had that this year. You know, when I was going through a rough patch there, and, you know, and slogging through, you know, I thought about, you know, when I was having to work, you know, full time, or periods where I didn't have work for months on end, and that helped me, you know, get through it.
Yeah, that's it. Like, it's really one of those, you got to be tough skinned, but if you get it, you're good. Like, it's always worth it on the other side, I think. And now we got really deep and motivational here all of a sudden, but still, like, it's really worth it, I think. It's always really, really worth it in the end, because, as we said before, you get to be happy. You know, how many people can really say that they're that happy anymore? It's like, yeah, down periods, but whatever. So it's really one of those things. And Sean, you get to make comics, and you get to do all this crazy stuff now. And I'm also curious, kind of changing gears a little bit here to it, is you've worked so much in Marvel and whatnot too, but what is, like, is there a story or a character that you maybe never got a chance to work on? Because I'm always curious about this, people who do a lot. Is there one that you wish you could do? Like a storyline or a character? Well, not storyline, I don't want to spoil it, but a character maybe that you want to touch that you haven't yet.
Right. Well, I've always had a fondness for Bruce Wayne.
Really?
And I kind of always had this kind of idea of wanting to write about Bruce Wayne's life, not so much the Batman part of it, but, you know, like just something, you know, he's become, he's as a character, he's become so grim, dark, and narrowly sort of focused. And I haven't been reading the current Batman stuff, so maybe it's not that way.
Yeah, it's
but
still
I mean, just the general trend is that Batman is who he is, and Bruce Wayne is a facade.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's necessarily true, or at least I think that you can write a story where that's not necessarily true. I'd like to look at his life a little more holistically, which is something I don't think I'll ever get to do, but I think it's kind of an interesting thing. Over at Marvel, I never got to write Cloak and Dagger, and that was something where I thought I could do a nice soft reboot of their origin story and just kind of
really
do it from scratch. Yeah,
Cloak
but there was
Dagger.
Always something in the way, like, oh, we're saving those characters for this writer, or you know, they're pretty cold right now, we don't want to do anything. So I never got to, you know, as many times as I asked, I never got to do anything with them.
I mean, they got our own TV show now, so you never know anymore.
Yeah.
With that, but Cloak and Dagger, that's one I would never expect. I don't often hear that, is Cloak and Dagger. I like them. They're cool.
Yeah. I think there's something really interesting about their relationship. And I mean, in my head, I have Jay Lee drawing it, too. So
would
be the style.
Yes.
That gothic look, you know.
Oh, Jay Lee's amazing. I met him at a con once. He's an amazing dude, too.
Yeah, but I do have things that I would like to do at Marvel or DC still, mm-hmm. but it feels like that those doors have been closed to me at this point, and
really?
I stopped getting work from either publisher in 2011. Mm-hmm. It was a timing thing for both situations, but a lot of the stories I want to tell now just really don't have much to do with that kind of superhero material, or it's the kind of material that I don't think that they would be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm much more content now, focused on new ideas that I have and looking for things that aren't chasing trends, but trying to find a niche that isn't represented in comics right now.
I dig that. Which, by the way, first before we go on, is one I really want to read your Bruce Wayne, because that character definitely needs it these days. Well, I got to put that out there. But so DC, I know you guys, I know those people who work there that are listening, get on it. But there is that of, I really dig that mentality and like looking at it as that, because you have Outpost Zero out right now, which I've been reading that a little bit, and that's just, I love it. I really love it because it's so cool. It's so out there. It's so different. Like, that's what I think with that, with you going about it with that sentimentality, is that's the stuff that we really need as comic book readers right now too. An industry I think needs it is these things that are way different, that just kind of push away the trope a little bit. We get these like different out there things, you know, like we got Saga, like we have Outpost Zero, we have Spawn, Spawn a little bit too, but we have all these crazy different things out there. And I think that's what comic books are slowly edging towards, and what readers really are edging towards is that sort of style of things.
Yeah, I think when I was selling comics in the 90s, we had a really good indie scene in comics then, and a lot of different genre material being published. But I think now, more than ever, not just in the direct market, with the breadth of stories being told, but also outside of the direct market in bookstores, where you've got, you know, people like Raina Telgemeier, you know, selling millions of copies of Smile, and publishers like First, Second, and Scholastic are getting comics in front of kids, you know, and they're not superheroes, and they're not the sort of things that we would typically associate with comics that you find in the comic book store. The comic book stores I shop at have that stuff in them, but you know, it's not what the soul of that sort of that segment of the industry was built on. You know, it was built on the newsstand comic books of the 1970s.
Yeah.
Which was mostly superheroes. And so that's kind of where that focus has always been. But I think we're in a really great place right now creatively. It's really weird on the business end, because I think that there are things that the direct market is doing that would be big in the wider world, but there's whatever barriers, you know, that are there to get them to the wider public. Yeah. There's also still a problem of public perception that comic books equals Avengers, you know. And there are people who aren't really converting from the superhero movies to being interested in the superhero comic books, which is unfortunate.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a weird situation right now. But creatively, I mean, gosh, you got to be really happy with the breadth of material that's out there. It's not all for me, but I mean, that's what I love about it, right?
Yeah.
There's something for everybody.
There is. It's never just made a certain way. It's never just that one certain thing, a certain subject, a certain genre, or anything like that. Like, it is this whole now peripheral of things. It's just like, you want to read something gothic? Oh, there you go. You want to read Sabrina in Hell and shit like that? There you go. It's like, you want to read superhero? There you go. Space? There you go. Like, it's with everything with it. I agree with you. 100%. It is a wonderful time to be a comic book reader. And writer, too. And artist.
Sure. I think one of the things I'm glad about is Marvel just reprinted a series I did called Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane.
Yes,
and that, we started that in 2005, and that was really an attempt by Marvel, you know, along with several other things that they were trying at the time, to reach that wider marketplace. Mm. But, you know, it just wasn't the right time, apparently, you know. And the book... didn't do well in comic book stores. It did pretty well for them outside of comic book stores. But I'm glad that they're reprinting it now, because I think that we really are at the time where people are, you know, it's not just the typical, like, 12-year-old boy that's interested in, you know, in male power fantasies kind of thing. You know, like there are lots of... There have always been, right? But now it's more and more accepted that there are lots of women and girls who like superhero comics, or they just like comics, you know, and like what you like, you know, and so I think that having something out there that's, you know, it's ostensibly a romance comic book that has Spider-Man and some superhero stuff in it, you know, I think that that's a good place for people to kind of be able to sample something a bit outside of what their expectations of comics might be. And Marvel's making a lot of stuff like that now with, like, Devil Girl and Dinosaur and Ms. Marvel and things like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. It's all diverse. It's really, people are like, oh, the comic industry is in shambles. Like, no, not really, because they're knowing what their audience is and they're adapting to the new audience. It's not the, you're right, it's not that this 12-year-old boy or whatnot, like, there's one, I don't think I've ever said this on the show before. There's one example with this gal. She was this big supermodel, and we were working together on a movie and stuff like that. She found out I was a comic book nerd. She, like, went off. She was this huge comic book fan, and everyone around her was like, what? It's like, because there's, like, this goddess, basically, to, like, men around her. And they're like, she's a huge nerd. She's, like, popping off Marvel and DC facts like nothing. And I'm like, oh, she's like, oh, yeah, when this, and we're all both, like, bonding over comics and stuff like that. And people, like, their minds are blown. I'm like, no, that's just the state of the way that it is now. It's the state of comics.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
You gotta blow those stereotypes out of the water, you know? And I think it's become more and more of a sort of common thing. But, I worked at a comic book store in Ohio for a while. And even there, you know, you'd occasionally get some idiot customer going, a girl in a comic book store, you know? And it's like, oh, shut up, dude.
Yeah.
Don't be weird.
Now the girls would kick their ass. That'd be the problem.
Yeah. But it's much more common than people accept. I mean, I see it at conventions. I definitely see it. I do a one-day convention every year here in town at a library.
It's,
you know, free admission. And there are so many kids and girls who are just in love with this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And just passionate about it. And it's amazing to see, and I love it. I'm glad that there's a next generation of comic fans. I just hope that the comic book retailers that exist are able to get them in their doors and be welcoming of them, so that those stores can continue to flourish. The stores are having a hard time right now.
They are. I've seen them. Some of them are adapting. Some of them are not. Like, over here in Phoenix, we have, or Arizona in general, the whole wide area, I've seen a bunch of them who have not wanted to adapt and kept the mentality. Yeah, their doors are shut. The one I go to drawing the comics here, they are adapting. They're knowing what to do. They don't criticize. They don't discriminate. They don't do any of that jazz in there. They're like, our audience is everybody, and that's what it's always going to be. So, and I love them for that. And there's some who have adapted, and they've tried adapting, and they're like, well, we only do digital now, or something like that. So it's like, okay, I guess I get that, maybe, but you know, like, we only sell stuff online and auctions. Like, all right, cool. So they're trying, and the ones who were in that time now, I've definitely seen it, is those ones who aren't adapting and doing that stuff, is their doors are shut. They're shut within a year. They're shut within a month. They're just starting to shut down, and they fall in, like, dominoes.
I used to go, I go to Phoenix somewhat regularly, to visit family, out there. And I used to, like, since the early 90s, I would go now and then to the All About Books and Comics on Camelback.
Oh, that's a good place there.
Yeah. I was last there maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it looked like they had, you know, I mean, they were always kind of like one of those, like legit, like, we love all comics kind of stores.
Yes.
And it seems like they were still that way, and we're doing pretty good business on a Wednesday, so I was really happy.
It's the fanciest comic book store I think I've ever seen. They still are that. But even from going back when I visit Chicago, I always go to the Chicago one up there in downtown. I always visit there. That one's pretty cool. And whenever I go places, sometimes I'll go to a store. But I love drawing the comics, so I'm a subscriber there. But All About, like, they really are, like, you walk in and you're like, it's a Scottsdale store, it seems like now. It's, like, so fancy. It's really weird. It's like, I like it. It's cool. And you guys always have good merch. And you're always so inviting the people and whatnot. And they were real happy about it. And they said, hey, they were real happy. And they gave me, like, a little bit of a discount sort of thing when I was there. Because I was in a comic book recently from a friend of mine. So I was like, cool. But, yeah, man, it's such fun times. And speaking of diversity a little bit here is Outpost Zero. I love the cast in there too, by the way. I want to talk about that a little bit here, a little bit more. Like, let people know what it is and where they, like, that they can go buy it and pick it up and support you a little bit, because it's still ongoing, if I'm correct, right?
Well, it's ongoing for about another 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Unfortunately, you know, it just, you know, the sales weren't great from the start. You know, I don't know what factors played into that, but it just didn't launch very high. So 14 will be the last issue, but, you know, I went back and rewrote the last three issues so that we'd give it as satisfying an ending as possible. And
good.
And I think I've, you know, pat myself on the back a little bit here. I think I've done a pretty good job of that. You know, the whole idea behind Outpost Zero, you know, from a premise perspective, is it's, you know, one of several generation ships that have left Earth and you know, was headed out to a new planet to colonize, crash lands on an ice planet, and the people who survive are trapped inside the biome on this lifeless planet, and the biome is faulty, and you know, over time they you know, they don't have any of the information of their history, and they don't know how anything works, because, you know, all the experts are dead.
Yeah.
And it's you know, these 10,000 people living in a biome built for a million, just trying to survive, and whether or not that's enough, you know, or should we thrive? And so we follow a group of 14-year-olds who are just graduating and becoming adults, and are given their roles in the society, and it deals a lot with, you know, existential questions of you know, of why even continue to exist, and you know, a lot of anxiety and depression kind of stuff that I was working through in the wake of my father's passing 5 years ago. And that's that, you know, it is definitely, you know, kind of a sci-fi book, but at the same time, it's really more about, you know, a bit of existential horror and friendships and understanding and trying to find hope. You know, it's a bit weightier than the premise might initially make it sound, but it's also, I feel, an optimistic book.
Which I've discovered in it, and that's beautiful, by the way, the motivation behind it and everything else with it, Sean. Like, I really think that's amazing, and I thought the book is really cool, and with it, of what it is, and with those morals and the storyline of it, as a guy who works in film and touching television and shit, let me tell you, there's really good possibility I could see this becoming a show on Sci-Fi or Netflix or something like that.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Like, really, I know, could.
I know Skybound, you know, talks to the Hollywood people a lot. I guess Robert Kirkman knows some people in Hollywood.
just a bit. Just a tad. I mean, who again? This Kirkman fellow. Who is he in this? Oh, my God.
So, yeah,
God.
We'll see what happens with that. But, you know, that would be neat. I'm more excited about, you know, what's next, and
yeah,
you know, which pitch I get accepted next, at which publisher, and what I get rolling on. And then I've got another 6-issue miniseries that I actually wrote like 3 years ago now, that I'm doing with my longtime collaborator Mike Norton. He's the guy I co-created Gravity with, who's that's a superhero at Marvel. And it's a teen horror comic, like a YA horror comic. We had a lot of fun putting it together, and you know, Mike started drawing it, and now we're looking for publishers for that. So that's pretty exciting too.
I dig that, man. Like, that's cool. I really, without, man, Sean, I see really good things in your future, man. Like, if I really do, like, as an indie guy, as a fellow indie guy, to another one, like, I really, really see good things, and Outpost Zero is a series that I really want people to read, because especially if what you just described with your father, with what it, the heavy morals with it and whatnot too, if that doesn't convince people to read it, then I don't know what they're thinking about, because that obviously is one where, especially with us talking about the difference in comics, it's something you gotta read, you gotta check out, you gotta have these things in there a little bit, because maybe there's something in there that touches that, maybe if you're in a down place, like the reader is, maybe it can help you through something as well. And it sounds like Outpost Zero is very therapeutical for you in creating.
It was therapeutic for me, and I hope it is for other people. I mean, I wrote it for people who have suffered things like, you know, like anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation, because it, you know, it deals very heavily in that stuff. And it's, you know, it's an examination, but it's not a glorification, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah, which is a, as a guy myself who's been through a lot of that shit, I really, really appreciate it. Like, I really do, because it needs to be tackled upon, and comics is, like, the best way to almost tackle it, almost, in a sense, I want to say, other than actually having people there to help you. But in this, I don't know, man, like, there was a while ago, I used to work for this therapeutic company that used science fiction and fantasy as a way to help people with situations like that. And so they would use, like, comics and stuff like that. And it worked very, very well. The only reason it's out of business is a friend of mine, he, who was the CEO, he passed. So it was one of those things where the company just kind of fell under after that, but helped a lot of people with that. And so, like, science fiction, fantasy, and comics, especially yours, you know, that it's stuff there that helps people out more than people realize. And I think people who maybe are outside the comic book world, they don't think about that a little bit, but with Outpost Zero and other books too that really tackle with helping people out in those really real situations. And that's what I love about comics. One of the many reasons is that can help people out with those and change the world and change people, you know, for the better.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting company that you described.
Yeah, it was cool.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it works. It really works. You know, like, comic books prove it on the weekly. It works.
You know, escapism is great, and I think what some people misinterpret about escapism is they think it's a way to get away from your problems. But I found that, you know, escapism into really good sci-fi that tackles interesting questions about humanity.
Yeah.
Are actually, they are an escape, but at the same time, they tell you something. You know, they tell you something about you and about the people around you that is real, and that helps you. You know, something like one of my favorite movies is Gattaca. I think that's such a wonderful story about class and determination and will. The sci-fi trappings make it, make that story sing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We live in a wonderful time, Sean. I think we really do. Like, it really is this wonderful time where all this stuff can help you more than it ever has in the past for people and such. And I know we got kind of back on like the serious thing a little bit here, but hopefully folks at home listening take this, or wherever they are, driving to work or wherever it may be, take this into consideration, because, we're two guys who know a little bit what we're talking about. Sean, who's a little bit older than me, he knows a little bit more, is more experienced with it, to say the least. But, we try to give people that sort of thing. I think it's creatives that always seems like one thing I like to do is always try to put stuff out there. The fun, crazy shit, that's always out there, like, oh, the worldly and the hero sort of thing. Fun escapism, but then some stuff that tackles some seriousness. Like, there's a series I'm working on right now. I can't talk much about it, but it is hero-based, but it is also one of those that tackle a bunch of issues and whatnot in my home city of Chicago. So it's, like, racism, sexism, current political things going on and whatnot, but then also, like, giving that hope for people, Like, because Chicago can be rough. It can be very rough. And so people often feel hopeless. And so the story of the moral of the book is we have all these issues in that city, but there is hope, and, like, how to find a hope within the people and such like that, with having people with powers and stuff like that. I can't say any more before I'm getting in trouble.
Yeah.
So,
but, and there's nothing wrong with the other kind of escapism either, right?
No, there's not.
Like, you can go see Hobbs and Shaw, and you can have a fun time and not learn anything about yourself except maybe you have a crush on The Rock.
Yes.
And that's fine, I mean, there's nothing wrong with just plain old entertainment. That sounds kind of dismissive, but with something that's not striving for some kind of deeper message or truth or something, I like just entertainment, and I have some ideas for things that are just kind of batshit, but even in those, like, I like to have, this is just for me creatively, I like to have something true to latch onto within that, something thematic that I can say, in a way, this is about this subject, and it doesn't even have to touch on it very deeply, but it kind of gives it, it gives it more, it gives it a higher thread count, let's say that.
Yeah, I like the way of putting it. The higher thread count, it gives it more, not relatability.
Fiber in your diet. It just really makes it a more cohesive story.
Oh, yeah. That's the better way to put it. See, you're the writer. You're the better writer.
I'm the elder learned writer.
Yes. Oh, you're the Merlin, and I'm just Arthur, like, oh, I know what I'm doing. We're like, no, son, sit down.
I'm the court jester, sir. And this is an Arby's.
Why? Oh, my God. Why not both, right? Oh, it's amazing. All right, we're hitting over the hour limit, Sean. I don't want to take too much of your time, man, but I definitely want to say thank you for coming on. And it's been a blast having you on the show to talk about all this stuff and talk about your work, too, which is oh so extensive,
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. And, I tell people, find me on Twitter at Sean K. McKeever. Yes. As soon as this app is released in the U.S., it's called Storyscape. That's the app coming out from Fogbank Entertainment that will have my X-Files game. I'll be shouting it from the rooftops, and it's a freemium game, so you can pretty much play the entire story for free. There's a little bit of bonus story that maybe you have to pay for if you're impatient and don't want to wait for credits to play that stuff. But it's free to check out, and it's a visual narrative game. It's pretty cool, and And there's nothing stopping you unless you don't have a mobile phone, I guess.
Fair enough.
Or a tablet.
Yeah. If you don't have the thing that most people have in your, I don't know.
You're probably listening to this podcast on.
Pretty much, yeah. You have it on there. Oh, my God. Yeah, so make sure, folks, you guys definitely follow Sean on there. Oh, Sean, before I let you go, though, before we finish up, is I want your opinion on something really fast. You've worked on Teen Titans, and...
Yes.
What do you think of the Titans show? By the way, epic Teen Titans run. I love it with a passion. But what do you think of that Titans show? They dropped a new trailer today, too. A little bit before
I
we started.
I never watched it.
No?
No, I kind of tuned out at Fuck Batman.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And I'm probably not giving it a fair shake, you know. I think Geoff Johns is a really good writer. He understands. His Teen Titans run I'd absolutely adore.
Ooh.
And he was a tough act to follow. But it seemed a little too dark to me, and it reminded me of the kind of stuff that not to get too inside baseball, but it was the kind of stuff that I felt like editorial was pushing on me to write when I was writing Teen Titans.
Yeah.
That kind of took it to a joyless place, and that just doesn't interest me all that much. And I don't have the DC Universe app, so I heard Doom Patrol is great, but I haven't seen it. When that stuff winds up elsewhere, I'll check it out, you know. I'm saving my next app purchase for Disney Plus, of course.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, we're Star Wars. Are you kidding me? Oh, that's a whole nother show, man. That's like another half an hour of talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, we could talk all day.
Oh, my God. I might bring you back. It'll be like, Sean, you want to come back for Star Wars? We're just going to talk about the trailer and just geek out, okay?
We'll do an hour about the comic book store I had, and yeah.
Oh, my God. Man. You have such a plethora of history that I really think, like, podcast is a fun way to document it a little bit, Sean, but I really think I'd look into an autobiography, man.
Yeah, I don't want to. I already navel-gaze too much. I don't want to look that far back into
Fair enough.
But, you know, you'll see enough of it peeking out here and there inside of a fictional comic book.
Oh, that's a good way to write. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. And folks at home, if you want to follow me, you can follow me at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter and then at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. You want to follow me. But make sure you guys follow Sean. Make sure you guys check out Outpost Zero. And make sure you get the new X-Files game coming out, because I'm honestly, as an X-Files nerd, I'm excited. Oh, man.
Thanks, Dakota.
Of course, man. And Sean, any final words for people at home?
Have a great day.
The most epic outro of all time. Stay classy, comic book fans.